DH Unplugged is supported by Our Crowd. Our Crowd helps you invest early in pre-IPO companies alongside professional venture capitalists. If you're interested in investing, you need to join Our Crowd for free at OurCrowd.com/
Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here it is, the 8th of June. We have a 5-show month.
You know, you get more bang for your buck with than any other show. Nobody that does it weekly but us have 5 possible shows.
No.
It's amazing.
I don't know what they're doing.
Yep. Let me tell you about a couple things that are going on. Over the weekend, we were rocking and rolling to Bimini. I don't know if I sent you any of those pictures.
Oh, that's right. You mentioned you were going to Bimini in the footsteps of that Hart character. Who was running for president.
Oh, Gary Hart?
Gary Hart.
Gary yes. Hart. Yeah, and he had that boat and all such of shenanigans on that boat.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting.
Although now modern research indicates that he was set up.
Yes. That was definitely a political scammery.
It worked. Central,
it did. It worked very well. Well, I will tell you that we decided to go on Thursday. That was when everybody was going. And my friend.
What do you mean everybody was going?
So there was a bunch of, it was a yacht club annual Bimini Bash. It was the Lauderdale Yacht Club Bimini Bash, where we all go over to Bimini.
Everybody, where is Bimini?
Bimini is 50 miles, I will call it east-southeast of Fort Lauderdale, directly 50 miles across, 58 miles across from Miami.
So it's just a little.
It's like a sandbar.
Who owns it?
Bahamas.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, usually you can get over there in a reasonable amount of time and all. Well, the weather was not cooperating. And when I say not cooperating, I mean not cooperating, okay? Bad. And this is my wife's first crossing. We got her set up in the back with a beanbag, and my friend and his wife in the back with a beanbag, and another buddy of mine, Storm, he's coming, and we're going to go across. He's got 4 people on his boat. His boat's a little bit bigger than mine. And we're going across. So we leave at 12 o'clock the house, 12:30. We are at Storms. 1 o'clock, we are heading out the inlet. And we know it's windy. We know it's going to be bad. And let me tell you, an understatement. It is hellacious. It's 6 to 8 foot waves. Not something that I would take my boat out under normal circumstances. We said, let's see how bad it is. Maybe it'll calm down after the inlet. My boat is going... I don't even know what angle it is. Let's just say pitched straight up in the air.
I'm glad you're still alive.
Coming up in the air, straight down. I had my E-perbs. I had my homing beacons on the boat. I was all ready for emergencies, of course. And we're slamming down. We're going up and we're slamming down. And we're like, and so I'm on the radio. I was trying to grab the radio, the VHF mic. Hey, Storm, what are we doing? Storm's like, all right, we're okay right now, but let's see what happens. So we start traveling for about a half hour, and it is an absolute Gilligan's Island kind of situation, okay? And Storm says, I think I'm turning back, my friend. He's on the other boat. And I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to go a little while. Let's see what happens here. So I started going, and I hear him say he's turning back, and I'm like, okay, well, I'm continuing on. So we get now another hour. It finally comes down to 4 to 6 foot seas, which is still terrible. Then it comes down to 3 to 5. Anyway, get 4 hours. It takes me to do a trip that should be an hour and a half, maybe hour 45. Finally get there, beaten up. A lot more fuel used because of it. And we spend the weekend there. We're watching the whole weekend. The wind doesn't die down at all. And we, on the way back, fortunately, the waves were going with us, right? Because it's opposite. And I coasted home in an hour and 45 minutes.
Surfing, so blew you back.
Surfing back the waves. My wife decided to go on a friend's boat who has a 64-foot Ocean Alexander. The problem is it only has stabilizing wings on it and all that. The problem is it only goes 12 miles an hour, so it's getting like a little bobber in the water, right? She's sick as a dog the whole ride home. 5 hours it takes her to get home.
Why didn't she go with you?
She's afraid it was going to be too rough again.
Oh. So she didn't like the ride over, and then she made the mistake of that she was jinxed.
Yeah. It was a fun time, though. We did some fishing, did some partying, had a Junkanoo band come and parade, and it was fun. It was fun.
So how many people made it over?
About 90. About 25 boats. Yeah, about 25 boats.
And how many people bailed out like your buddy?
I think he ended up, I didn't finish the story. So then I get there, and like an hour and a half later, he shows up. I'm like, what happened? He goes, yeah, I just kept coming. I'm like, but you didn't tell me. I felt so bad. And then I'm feeling horrible. Why? That I ditched him.
Well, you didn't ditch him. He said he was going back.
I felt really bad the whole time. And they were obvious. Then they started ribbing me. Oh, you left me. We're supposed to be buddy boating. I'm like, oh, I feel really bad about this. But it was fine. It was all good. We had a great time. Did some fishing. I caught a fish I've never caught before, which was a black snapper, which was delicious. I made ceviche out of it. So that was good.
Black snapper. I don't know if
I know. I've never seen it before.
Did you have to look it up? Did anybody there know what it was?
I had to look it up because I caught it. It looked like a fish called the Bahama chub. And when you catch a Bahama chub, the fish just craps over. It immediately starts crapping and stinks. So I looked at it. I'm like, it kind of looks like a Bahama chub. Let's see. I'm like, well, it's not doing that stuff. What it usually would do if it was a Bahama chub. So somebody said, it looks like a snapper's tail, kind of tail, looked like a snapper. And somebody said, well, on the boat, well, maybe it's a black snapper. So I look up black snapper, and sure enough, that was the picture.
Huh.
Yep. So anyway, moving along, we have a new CTP, Close to the Pin, to be announced tonight. Apple Worldwide, World Developer Conference.
Developers Conference.
Event is a lot of announcements there. We have some summer volume happening in the market, slow season, but end of the quarter is coming, so that's going to be kind of interesting. And memes, the new way to invest. It's all about the meme. It's all about laser eyes and Bitcoin. It's all about finding those short interest companies, talking them up on Reddit, and just blowing them through the roof. And that is going on once again.
Well, we should follow this more closely, or I should.
Yeah, I mean, the names today, Clover Health, Chamath Palihapitiya, one of his names, up 100% today. We saw AMC, I think, flat today, but GameStop's at 300. A couple of names I had today, they were popping. Wendy's, the stock of the hamburger company, was up like 19% today. We own that. We just happen to own that because it's a good company. Then there was Workhorse, up like 150% recently. And the names go on and on and on. Koss, KOSS, Bed Bath Beyond, BlackBerry. Just goes on and on. We saw an jobs report last week. Market seemed to like it. We had this Goldilocks going on. Not too hot, not too cold for the jobs. Number 5.8% unemployment rate. Disappointed a little bit on the new hires. But markets were just like, they saw that on Friday, and like, yeah, yeehaw, giddy up. Nearing the all-time highs again for the S&P.
I can see how you can analyze it to push the market up. You know, that number, which I think is mediocre.
Well, it's better. It's on the way.
Well, right. There's that element as well. It's not getting too carried away. There's still a lot, you know, once these people stop getting their free money, they'll join in, and it's going to all be wonderful for the economy. Everyone's going to make a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean, there is that element where the savings rate is so high right now. It's historically high. And you have to wonder if when and if there is going to be a substantial amount of release where people are just like, all right, let me spend. I know I've kind of started spending a little bit more recently than I was. I felt kind of just a little bit more. You could feel that, right?
Yeah. Oh no, I have that too. Yeah.
So maybe a lot of people are doing that as well, but they're spending on things that are different. They're not buying the Peloton. They're not, you know, doing the home delivery of food. Maybe they're going out to, I don't know where, somewhere. Maybe they have cruises, or maybe they're going to go for a trip on a plane.
Well, you went to Bimini.
Yeah, I went to Bimini. That's right.
But you went every year, so.
Yeah, I go once a year. I try to go. What else do we have? A CEO whose death is boosting stocks. We're going to talk about that today, a particular one. Ransomware is in the spotlight, something you and I have been talking about, this whole ransomware issue and the concept of Bitcoin. And it was kind of an interesting thing that happened today, which we'll talk about. Maybe that caused Bitcoin to drop related to the whole ransomware situation with Colonial Pipeline. Then we have the IRS poking around as well. And crude, now more than $70. The highest since 2018.
Yeah.
And your comment is going to be too high.
It's too high.
Did I nail that one?
Should be $35.
Mm-hmm. And we're in a world where there's still a lot less travel going on, a lot less demand. And the fact is that even if we were at levels and there was no pandemic ever, if there was no pandemic, oil wouldn't be this high. If there was no pandemic, we would have a lot more question about the long-term use of Earl due to the conversion to electric cars, which is one of the greatest use of crude oil, right? Turning into gasoline?
Gasoline.
So I think that the shenanigans that are being played by OPEC, OPEC Plus, I think the fact that there's just so much money in the system is just inflating everything. Because you can't tell me the supply chain issues with this, like we have with chips.
No, this is rigged. I think the chips thing is rigged. I think all these jacked up prices are from rigging.
Yeah. That, I mean, everything?
Yeah, that's my new opinion. Yes, everything.
Is rigging any different than price gouging?
I think it's very similar. So but price gouging is something a seller does overtly on the spot. Rigging is a systematic thing.
Mm, I get what you're saying.
That's what I think. I think there's a slight difference.
So gouging is more like there's a hurricane coming. And
yeah, let's jack up the price of everything in our store.
Right. And it's a temporary phenomena that's just situational. And you're saying rigging is the consistent manipulation of a price.
Yeah, manipulation from the part of the supply chain where it can be rigged.
Yeah. Right. Well, hasn't oil always been that way?
Yeah, that's why it's $70. It shouldn't be. It should be $35.
Right. And for that matter, most commodities are also in that same genre of rigging.
Well, it looks like it now.
Yeah, I agree. They have lumber and all that. Some of it is clearly supply-demand, but I think they take advantage of that in a way to, you know, when gold, it's other materials too, but when there is a lack of demand, you know what they do? They shut down the mines, which they should because people don't need it and you don't need to provide it, but they shut down the mines and they leave it I think they leave it for too long of a period of time to keep those prices up and to artificially then have people want to buy it so that it is,
yeah,
continues to push
so
the price.
It becomes more profitable, yeah, if you open the mines up.
Right.
It probably costs money to play that game. So, you know, you have to wait. You know, it costs money to open and close and open and close.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about Janet Yellen, still talking for the Fed. She said that she's still doing it.
She still thinks she's the head of the Fed.
She thinks she's the head of the Fed. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said President Joe Biden should push forward with his $4 trillion spending plans, even if they trigger inflation that persists into next year and higher interest rates. She says, quote, if we ended up with a slightly higher interest rate environment, it would actually be a plus for society's point of view and the Fed's point of view. I don't understand. I mean, somebody gave me a thing today. They called it, what did they call it? Trafed? I think he called it the Treasury Fed, Trafed.
Yeah, I've seen this reference.
And it's the reference to the coordinated process. Even though the Fed is supposed to be separate and unique and different and siloed, right? But the coordinated process that is being used right now to pump up the system with the Fed and the Treasury Department. And you can't get anybody closer to this than Janet Yellen.
No, she's a crossover animal.
Like that show on Netflix. Anyway, I think what she's trying to do is calm markets with incremental inflation comments coming from a different side, not just the Fed. So that when it actually happens, everybody's like, eh.
Yeah, especially after promising everybody that nothing like this is going to happen for years.
Yeah. And then on top of that, she starts talking about the G7 deal, right? A 15% minimum corporate tax rate globally. So we went from-
Yeah, nobody wants to hear this sort of globally thing.
This is not going to happen. We went from isolationism back to globalism in like the flick of a switch.
4 months.
That's all it took?
So the United States, before the isolationism, which wasn't true isolationism,
it was more
even before that, no one was talking about global taxing.
Right. Even under Obama's, let's just, you know, make kumbaya, all we're all one country. We're all the world. We are the world. Right?
Yeah.
We went from that to protectionism. We're going to call it isolationism. We'll call it protectionism. Is that a better maybe
yeah,
reference?
I think it's more accurate.
Yep. So we went from protectionism back to just all out. Let's just somehow
turn over our sovereignty to some one world government.
Right. Yep. Build back better. Isn't that what that is?
Yeah. Build back better.
So as the United States, Britain, and other leading nations reached a landmark deal last Saturday to pursue higher global taxation on multinational businesses such as Google, Apple, and Amazon. I don't have it with me, but there's a list that we put together and showed the actual net tax rate. So the question is going to be something like this. So let's say that after all deductions, Amazon, Google comes in with an effective tax rate of 11%. And what are you going to do? Pay like a 4% penalty?
You know, I have no idea how this is supposed to work, if it's ever really supposed to work, or it's just a bunch of bull crap.
I mean, they're trying. What Janet Yellen said is that she's that this is a significant and unprecedented commitment, and it would end what she called a race to the bottom on global taxation. There's only a few places that are trying to woo in companies. Like, remember the Ireland thing?
Yeah, Ireland is one example.
As a classic example where
they've been trying to punish them ever since.
Yeah. So you take that kind of situation. I don't know. It's very odd that this is going to happen. And then I think you create problems because companies are going to do what they can to then somehow figure out ways around this anyway.
Yeah, of course.
So anyway, so Janet Yellen's on that too. So we go from her talking with the talking for the Fed, and then now setting up this whole G7 deal, which I just don't think is going to happen. So, golf. I have a question about golf. You can answer this. You're the guy to answer this. During the Obama administration, there was hysteria over how much Barack Obama played golf. Do you remember that?
Oh, yeah.
Hysteria. Then when President Trump was in, there was likewise hysteria over how much he played golf. You remember that?
Right. Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Have you heard of Biden playing even one round?
I don't think Biden can walk a course.
I was thinking about this the other day. I mean, presidents going down the list, down the years, played golf, right? That's what they do, right? Some played more than others.
I don't remember Nixon playing golf. And I don't remember Gerald Ford playing golf.
I think Ford played golf.
I know Clinton played golf.
Yeah, Clinton played golf.
I mean, Ford was a college athlete, which is amusing. But so he could play golf.
What about Bush? Anyway, point is the last two presidents. Yeah.
There's a lot of golfing that goes on with these guys.
A lot of golf. But I was thinking about it and I was wondering, I haven't heard a peep out of everybody. So what does he do? Does he have a thing? He's not just working all the time, is he?
He's sleeping a lot.
He's sleeping a lot. Yeah. Oh, God. All right. So in between naps, he's sleeping. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I don't know that he has any hobbies. So smelling hair.
Smelling hair. Or teaching dogs to attack.
His poor dogs. Those are dogs that are mismanaged. Dogs were not trained properly.
Let's talk about ransomware franchising. So I think we touched on this in the last show or so. We talked about how the idea, this dark side, there's a hacker group that is out there. And basically what they are is, well, they're a hacker franchise where you have the potential, I'm simplifying, where you have the potential for a hole to be bored into some company's firewall. Again, simplifying, so don't send me all sorts of emails that I don't know what I'm talking about, because first of all, I don't know what I'm talking about, but secondly, kind of I do. But the thing is that now it just sits and waits, and maybe somebody says, hey, we got in there. What are we going to do now? They call up, they go on the dark web, they figure out, they get this dark side, and they're like, well, they pretty much have a whole process. Well, we're going to do this, we're going to put this on there, and then we're going to wait, and then we're going to do some ransomware. We'll set you up with a Bitcoin account. We'll set you up with all the whole process. We'll help you through the negotiation, etc. Blah, blah, blah. You kind of hand it off. We'll take X amount of dollars for that. So you basically have this ransomware software, and DarkSide is they have the ability to extract money from their targets. Why don't they shut this thing down, this dark side?
Well, they're talking about that. It's like almost like a leasing operation.
Yeah, it's a referral.
You go in there and you say, I need to use your mechanism to go after this company or that company, and then they walk you through it or they help you get to do it right, which is getting in early and then letting it simmer in there so the backups are all infected.
Right.
Which is key to the whole making it really work. And why don't they just shut down them, that one operation? Well, it's a good question. Maybe the whole thing is run by the FBI or the CIA for all you know.
Aha. Nice. So,
I mean, it seems to me if there is a dark, I could probably find it. The hackers who are doing the ransomware attacks find it. Why can't the FBI and CIA not only find it, but figure out who's running it?
Now, supposedly what's happened is this Colonial Pipeline, somehow the Justice Department found a way to recover.
Fishy story.
Yeah, recovered $2.3 million in cryptocurrency ransom paid by Colonial Pipeline. Now, you and I talked about the fact that we don't understand why we can't somehow figure out what wallet it was sent to and go after that unless it's... You know, there was no intermediary or there's got to be a way to track all this. And even though there, you know, because Bitcoin on one hand talks about, you know, privacy, but also talks about transparency. You know, the blockchain and all that. So the Justice Department has found and recaptured the majority of the ransom paid by Colonial. Now, you have to wonder if that's why Bitcoin is going down so significantly today. Because they're like, well, if Bitcoin can't be used for all this, then what's the juice? If Bitcoin is being used for ransomware, or the other side of it is, wait a second, the government cracked the encryption and cracked the and was able to find where the money went. Is that a problem for those that wanted to have a currency or store of value or this crypto stuff that was free from government intervention, and now all of a sudden governments can actually get in there?
Can they?
If the story is true, which is the baseline of the discussion here, if they went after and recovered because they were able to track and trace and then find it, something kind of interesting there.
Something's up.
Yeah, somebody mentioned, okay, they didn't crack anything. They had the private keys for the wallet. How'd they get the private keys for the wallet? I understand that. I understand. I'm using different terms. They got the keys to the wallet. They got into it. Point is, how'd they get there? That's what I'm trying to say. How'd they get into it? And that, when I'm not really asking the question. I'm stating the point. They got into it. They were able to extract it back. And I think that spooked some people in the crypto world.
Well, maybe.
Yeah.
I kind of stayed out of it. So I don't know what the thinking is. I know it's somewhat hypnotic. People get all kind of caught up in the whole thing. Next thing you know, they're putting their money in it.
Yep.
As some sort of a substitute for gold, which seems to me to be a better idea. Or platinum. I'd rather put my money in platinum.
Yeah.
I think platinum is undervalued.
I mean, anything with inflation right now that's a hard asset should be able to do well if, in fact, we do have or alternative asset that's outside the boundaries of the dollar or against the dollar, priced in dollars is good. If, in fact, I had a long conversation with a portfolio manager today who specializes in fixed income and currencies, and we talked about the idea of, you know, how are we going to deal with all this debt, the trillions of dollars of debt that now we have as a country, and the only way out of it is, in fact, inflating our way out of it, debasing our currency.
Yeah, but we're not a dead currency. We're not a dying currency. No. We're still the reserve currency of the world, so it's going to maintain itself just by that alone. I think we're going to skate through this by some magic.
That's because every other country is trying to do the same thing, and it's a race to the bottom there.
Yeah.
You know? All right, Tesla. Tesla is starting to use cabin cameras in some Model 3 and Model Y vehicles to make sure drivers are paying attention to the road when they use driver-assisted features. I want you to think about this for a second. So the Model 3 and Model Y cars already had driver-facing cabin cameras, but the company's owner's manual said they were not used for driver monitoring. Instead, they said they required drivers to check in by touching the steering wheel, which is equipped with sensors when you're doing this assisted driving. But now Tesla is telling drivers that their cabin cameras have been switched on for driving monitoring in new vehicles that lack radar sensors. Could you imagine? Somebody has the ability to turn your camera on in your car?
Yeah, they probably listen too.
This is no good.
No, it's not good.
I mean, you can always pull the old
gaffer's tape trick that I recommend. Yeah. You just put a little gob of, see what happens.
Take a little chewing gum.
Stick it right on there. Put it over the mic too while you're at it.
I don't understand. It gives me the heebie-jeebies with the idea that they could just turn on and off that kind of thing in the car. It's very troubling.
I don't like it. Mm. But I don't drive a Tesla.
Yeah, but who knows what other cars are going to put this in?
Oh, everyone's got all kinds. They got black boxes in the cars now.
Well,
they
monitor
where you're going.
Why do they have these to begin
with? That's why you had to buy an older car.
You got to disconnect. You need an AMC Pacer.
You know, I used to own one of those.
Did you?
You know, it's the silliest thing because it was actually one of the best cars I've ever owned.
Really? Such a strange.
Yeah, it was very roomy. It was goofy looking. It was very roomy. When you open the door, the seat swung out, so you can just kind of jump out of it. The steering wheel kind of moved out, and your seat twisted over, and then you just jumped out. It was a pretty interesting car. The visibility was unlike anything.
Well, you were in a fishbowl.
Yeah, dynamite.
Yeah.
Very futuristic.
But I have a personal question as to why they were put in there in the first place and what else is in that car that we don't know about from tracking, tracing, cameraing, microphoning, and all that, right?
Yeah, and what can you take out and what can you remove legally?
Right.
Because nowadays you buy these cars and you have to, it's like a EULA is involved.
You have EULA, and it may also be a problem for insurance.
Yeah, there's all kinds of possibilities.
Yeah.
So you have to figure out what, because I know there's nothing in a car that can't be disabled by the, or the computer could be swapped out for something better, something different.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of things you can do to these modern cars that people won't do, but some guys might.
Yeah. I'm not buying it. I'm not doing it. I mean, my car, maybe there's a camera looking at me all the whole time. I don't know. I don't think so. Yeah, probably. Let me ask you something. Let me ask everybody something, because we're going to talk about our crowd for a second here, because over the last several years, a lot of people have wished that they could be a part of some of the best performing IPOs throughout 2019, 2020, and our crowd investors were, and now you can join in what's next. With our crowd, accredited investors have access to invest directly, easily, and most importantly, early. Our crowd investors have benefited from our crowd companies going IPO, like Beyond Meat, or being bought by companies like Intel and Microsoft, Nike and Oracle. And our crowd has a group of people that basically are crunching it. They have investment professionals that have reviewed thousands of companies, invested hundreds of millions of dollars, closed investments over 200 companies. And now you could join our crowd's investment in Moodify. You need to listen to this because it's interesting. It's a company who's radically altering the multi-billion dollar fragrance market by, listen, digitizing scents. Moodify is the first company to develop software that enables function-specific scents that improve mental performance, eliminate the perception of bad odors, and much more. You can get in early on Moodify and other unique opportunities at ourcrowd.com/DHU. So if you're interested in investing, you need to join Our Crowd. Again, it's free. The account's totally free, but just go to OURCROWD.com/DHU. Thank you. So
I've always wondered when someone was going to commercialize that what's been going on for probably 25 years, which is these, you know, little scent things that people would sell at the county fair. You buy a little device, it plugs in, and you buy these different scents, so the room smells like chocolate or donuts or lilies.
Lilies.
And nobody's ever really gone and commercialized it to an extreme. I think this is kind of interesting, this particular operation.
And it's digitizing, which is, I had to look this up. It was really cool to look up. So check it out. All right, let's talk about Credit Suisse. You know, one of the things that happened over the last number of years is these companies that we talked about, especially European banks, have taken on humongous amounts of risks. Credit Suisse and Deutsche Bank, right? Those are two that we always talk about.
Yeah, those are the two that keep cropping up in the conversation.
And you have to wonder, how is that? How is it that they are continually having this...
Are they that big a bunch of suckers is the question you're trying to ask?
No, here's the reason. I think we got to the bottom of this. Because here's the storyline. Credit Suisse's heavy losses from the collapse of family office Archegos and the decimation of billions of client investments backed by insolvent British financier Greensill have angered regulators and triggered a rare discussion among lawmakers about fining bankers. A rare discussion by lawmakers about fining bankers. Bank directors don't take responsibility for their actions because there's no need to. There are no real sanctions for mismanagement. And that's what they're talking about. So the new proposals...
Yeah, they're talking about it.
But my point is, if there's no even a hand slap...
No, let alone jail time, which is what put a stop to it.
Correct. So the what they're trying to do is create what was a groundbreaking British model that makes top management of financial firms directly accountable for their actions, and they're going to set to be discussed by Swiss lawmakers. But this is kind of the same thing that happened here. Like, what's the worst that can happen? You're going to forego some of your bonus? So instead of making $42 million?
That doesn't happen.
Right. No, of course not. How many years did Wells Fargo have problems before they finally said, okay, you know what? Maybe we need a new CEO.
Yeah, forever.
And there was two.
After the guy walked away with, like, I don't know, $250 million in parachute money.
Yeah, there was two bankers in that situation that were definitely fired, and probably, I think there was some clawbacks there. But it's I don't know. You know, it's kind of disturbing that there is no accountability, and that is important as the baseline to understand where the risk comes in the markets. Everybody knows the game. Because if you were a bank, John, and I said to you, hey, here's access to money, do it, you know, large amounts of money, and you're going to be paid on the growth of this or that, what are you going to do? You're going to find the most crazy investment idea that you think is going to do well, but take enormous amounts of risk, because the worst thing that's going to happen, it's not going to work out. But
in the meantime, I could pump that baby up and take all these bonuses.
Yeah.
Just keep buying and buying and buying until I can't buy anymore.
Correct.
The joke where the guy says, buy. The stock keeps going up, and the guy on the other end says, okay, it's up to $1,000 a share. I says, okay, sell. And right. The punchline is, to who?
Right, right. So let's talk a little bit about meme trading. I was going to talk about the big news. The new name for the AT&T spinoff is Warner Brothers Discovery.
So yeah. At least stupid name.
At least they didn't call it WBD Plus. So the show, Invest Like You Meme It. Invest Like You Meme It. The memes. So what's happening is that we got these option plays, right? We got this big push to buy out of the money or near the money options that requires the option sellers to buy the stock. It moves everything up. It's this big game. It's an inefficiency in the market that has been exploited dramatically. And it's happening day after day after day. And finally, the SEC says they're going to start monitoring it, which I'm not sure what that means. We're going to monitor it. But Gary Gensler at the helm, there may be actually something that happens here, because in a way, there is the potential that some of this is questionable activity with message boards manipulating the price. Don't you think that?
Yeah.
Just because it's the retail underdog, those that have been cast aside by society.
Screwed for years. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That doesn't mean it should be okay.
No, not only that, but they're going to get screwed again. You can count on it.
Yes.
How? I don't know.
Yeah. So there's a lot going on there. It's interesting if you can get some of that. I will tell you that a couple of the stocks that we own for our portfolios with the TDI Managed Growth Strategy were part of that recently. One of them was PetSmart. It was up 58% one day last week. Wendy's today was up 25% or so at the peak, I think it was. I had a couple of stocks that I own that I had some options on that went berserk. Options were up like 650% in a matter of days. So, you know, you can't buy everything, can't know where they're going to go next. But it is kind of interesting what's happening here, taking advantage of this as an investor. You can find those and follow those. You don't have to stay in them forever and then, you know, ride them up and all the way down either. Just saying. Did you pay attention to the Apple Developers Conference at all and the announcements?
Not that much. I mean, a little bit. I picked up on some of the analysis of it. It's just, you know, I didn't find it to be. They rolled through a lot of stuff quickly. They had a bunch of emojis in the audience.
Incremental.
It was quick and quick. Yes, exactly. And they were in and out.
Well, a couple of things that came up were there's new privacy features that are adding to devices. One of the interesting things is if you're on FaceTime and in the past, you could only go iPhone to iPhone or iPhone to, I think, Mac, iPhone, or whatever. You know, you could use any of the Apple products. The bottom line of all this is that now, if I do a FaceTime call, I can actually send you a link for Windows.
Yeah.
And you can come on the FaceTime call, which, by the way, is not so dramatic. It's no different than Zoom.
No, it's not full featured though. The FaceTime Apple to Apple has got more things going on than FaceTime to Windows.
Probably. You can have new SharePlay. SharePlay can be used for Apple TV. You're gonna be able to share your device screen.
Oh, that's different. Never heard of such a thing.
Notifications. Brace yourself here. Notifications will have larger icons. There's a bunch of notifications things here. Usually can be told when you don't want to be disturbed before, when you want to be just not disturbed.
Oh, that's a new one.
Yeah. Here we go. A visual lookup will tell you breed of the dogs by using your camera. I need that for fish. I have a friend that does that for fish. Actually, there's a company
That's available for all kinds of things.
Right.
This is not a new technology.
Yeah, I mean, it's new technology inside the Apple phone. I don't know why we need this. It's like, is that so that you don't have to ask people? Hey, what kind of dog is that? It's a Shiba Inu Poodle Pie.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, it's because Apple people don't want to talk to anybody.
Maybe that's what it is. New key features will allow users to enter hotels and offices with your phone. Users can scan driver's licenses so it can be stored in the wallet app, and TSA will be integrating this feature in the airports. Maps will have a new 3D feature, which will allow drivers to see bike lanes and other things. That's the big deal. That's the big Apple deal. Thank you. SEC, now they want to look at this. The U.S. Securities Exchange Commission says it's scrutinizing markets for signs of manipulation and other misconduct.
Let's go over to Elon Musk's house.
You know, I was listening to No Agenda this morning from this weekend where Adam Curry was in Miami. I was away, so I'm not mad they didn't call me. But he was only there for 36 hours. He gave me some of the insights what happened there. By the way, No Agenda, you can listen to every Thursday and Sunday, 12 o'clock, Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak, deconstructing every piece of news, 3 hours strong, twice a week. You got to listen.
Good show.
Yeah, the best. So now, Adam was talking about it, talking about what the combo between, cross between Fry Festival and Comdex or something. And, you know, a lot of drinking, a lot of stuff going on there. But he was talking about how I lost my train of thought.
Bitcoins?
Yeah. Oh, I got it. He was talking about how there was this whole, you know, F Elon thing going on.
Oh, right. They're all irked by Elon.
Yeah, they're all mad at Elon. And then we saw that there was the anonymous video that was out. Did you see that?
No.
Anonymous, you know, the group Anonymous, right?
Sure.
So Anonymous is going after Elon, claiming the power he wields over cryptocurrency markets and the cavalier way he wields it has gone too far, especially as it pertains to Bitcoin, which has reacted wildly to Elon's words of late. He claims that even though Elon is positioning himself as concerned about the environment with Tesla's pivot away from Bitcoin, he doesn't practice what he preaches with the company itself, hurling many allegations against him. Now,
like what?
About that he suffers a superiority savoir complex, noting that he once dubbed himself the Emperor of Mars and that he's actually hurting working class people and their prospects by his constant crypto trolling.
What's working class people got to do with his crypto trolling?
The average guy who buys crypto is now losing money because he's making
it. The average guy who buys crypto is not a working class guy.
Nah. Yeah, this whole thing was really weird. But you tie that back to what's happened at this Bitcoin conference in Miami, which sounds like more like a snort fest, drinking, hooker, crazy party. Is that what you got out of it?
Well, my understanding was it was kind of a fiasco insofar as it was poorly organized and kind of a mess, and there was only one entrance, and It was just, you know, it was just sloppily done by amateurs, when in fact you can hire people to make these things work, but they never decided to do that, I guess. Hmm. It's something I have no interest in going to, that's for sure.
Yeah. From the work of heartless investors, there was an announcement that the Scholastic Corp CEO Richard Robertson passed at the age of 84 over the weekend, and on Monday, the shares were up 7%.
Yeah. Well, when you're in your 80s and running a company, it's always the benefits the company when you pass away.
Do you know what the claim to fame of Scholastic is? Do you know what Scholastic does?
Well, I'm guessing I don't, or you wouldn't have asked the question this way.
you know what they do. You do. I know you do. Part
They're
of
a publishing company.
Correct. They're a publishing company and primarily for books for schools, right? That kind of thing. I am under the impression they own the Harry Potter from the original. Originally, they own the Harry Potter collection.
This is news to me.
I think it's Harry Potter. I think that's what it is. I'm looking it up. Publisher of Harry Potter, Bloomsbury Scholastic. There it is. Yep. Originally published early by major publishers, Bloomsbury, United Kingdom, and Scholastic Press in the United States. Yep.
Huh. Well, good for them. Smart move.
Yep. But obviously never did very well. Starbucks said Tuesday it's going to start accepting reusable cups from customers in the United States later this month. More than a year after stopping the use due to COVID-19.
Yeah, these are their branded cups, though, right?
I think you...
It's not like any old cup. I think you had to buy a cup from them that you can reuse.
Like a little hot-cold cup?
It's some sort of a cup, like a Yeti? But it's got a certain size. You just can't bring in any...
Right, you can't bring in like a 36-ounce cup and ask them to fill it.
No.
So...
I think it's one of their cups.
Coffee chains have been encouraged the use of reusable cups and thermos flasks to lower their carbon footprint.
Yeah, it must do wonders for their carbon footprint.
Interesting. Yeah, somebody in the chat room is asking, how do you pre-order? How do you pre-order for the drive-thru? What do you do?
You can't.
And they don't write your name on it. The Securities and Exchange Commission is now drafting a proposal that would restrict plans for corporate insiders to use and corporate insiders' use to avoid insider trading claims when buying or selling their own company's stock. So, SEC Chairman Gary Gensler said he is seeking to revise rules that govern the arrangements known as 10b5-1s, which are plans that are used to set up trading ahead of schedule or on a schedule, so in the future. And the arrangement gives executives a defense against insider trading claims that would stem from having undisclosed material non-public information at the time of the trade. The problem is you set this up as a list, and I would like to sell shares. Today is June 8th. I'm going to sell them in 2 months and then release the information. You know what I'm saying?
They all, you know, there's not a moment in time where they don't have exclusive information. How would that even work as a CEO?
It's impossible. It's not possible. Of course they have information.
You have to sell their, people like to take money off the table or whatever you want to call it every once in a while. And some people like to invest in their own company.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Ballmer became one of the world's richest men by investing, just plowing his salary back into Microsoft.
Right.
He's one of the few, people don't realize it, but Ballmer's whole real claim to fame is that he's a world-class investor.
Right. So, but now that what they're trying to do is put a little bit of a kibosh on this and say that, you know what, we can't just allow for insiders to be... trading with non-public information that's material and just simply saying, we have
this problem I have with scheduling. Here's the problem I have with this whole thing, this whole idea of insider trading. You've seen it. I've seen it. You don't know whether the stock's going to go up or down if a deal's in the background lurking, ready to happen. A merger can take place between these two companies and all the stock, both companies' stock can drop like a rock.
Mm-hmm.
Or could go up, or one company can go up and the other one can go down, or one can go, it's just all kinds of things can happen. It's not predictable.
Right. Right. So
the insider trading is just as much of a crapshoot as anything else. I've never been a fan of if you find out that your company's going dead broke and you're going to come out with earnings and fold the company 2 weeks from now, yeah, I can see that being an issue.
Right.
But outside of stuff like that, it just seems to me to be just another way to scold CEOs. I'm not a big fan of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's two sides to this. I mean, if they are, in fact, skirting the rules by doing this, that's a problem. But you can't catch everybody doing it, right? Some people may be doing it in a way that is innocent. You know, they're just selling shares over time. Yeah, and there's others that may be hiding. But it's very difficult to catch all the bad guys. It's like trying to catch just tuna and get all sorts of stuff in your net. On the topic of inflation, there is no inflation, right? Don't we all agree? We are told there's no inflation, so we believe there's no inflation.
Zero.
No inflation.
Never heard of it. No.
Chipotle is hiking their prices 3-6% on menu items, and investors love it.
Ugh, brother.
They love it when they hike prices, which makes sense to me, because they make more money.
Well, maybe they're going to hike their prices out of a job.
They have to, and the excuse is that they're having to pay higher cost of labor.
Oh, really?
No, they are.
Okay, well, then you got to jack up the prices.
Yep, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. A couple of things to mention here. By the way, if you do enjoy the show, if you are listening in, you're getting some good ideas. If nothing else, we're getting your juices flowing. We're killing some time. We're putting you to sleep, whatever it may be. It's time to put some money back. It's time to give, to donate. Go over to dhunplugged.com, click on the yellow button that says donate, and give of yourself to help us out, to provide for the various things that we do. We don't ask for a lot. We're not looking to get rich. We just want to cover expenses, frankly. And maybe a cup of coffee. So donate to DH Unplugged. Make a donate to No Agenda 2, I guess. I don't know where that came from, but I guess I had No Agenda in my head.
Not in there. Put a button on your site.
I guess. but donate.
We're doing a damn good job. You got it buried in your brain there.
I did. It's good. It's good.
Talent.
I need a de-douching, I guess, or something. I don't know what's going on here. Okay, so, and you'll understand that if you listen to No Agenda, by the way. We are announcing a new closest to the pin. And I didn't ask you this time. I just did it. We are doing the Grayscale Bitcoin Trust just for the crap of it.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm good with it.
Yeah. So what you have to do is go over to DH Unplugged. You log in. There's a way to log in with your username and account because we have to track who it is. And you put your price guess in. It'll end in about a week and a half. You can enter that price of what the Bitcoin Trust GBTC is the symbol. And if you win, which will be announced about a week after that, because it'll be a closing period, if your price is the closest to the actual closing price, it's kind of like the price is right, you will be not only the proud wearer of a DH Unplugged t-shirt, but in the mix, in the groove, in the running for the Close to the Pin Cup for the end of the year, which is a whole big thing with trophies and
You get an actual cup.
Maybe you can take it to Starbucks. You can take a Starbucks and fill it up.
That kind of cup, I hope.
Real quickly, there was an article that I was reading tonight that really made me have problems. But it did, in fact, explain the meme. And like I said, invest like you meme it. Why meme investments are there and why people are involved. And I'm going to read you the quote. There is a link at the bottom of the show notes for episode number 559 on dhunplugged.com. And I want to read this to you because I was troubled. Maybe you'll probably straighten me out and say, what's the problem with it? And maybe something wrong with me. But let me just read this to you. Let me set this up. There's a whole article that was talking about why this guy is going to be rage investing in meme stocks, in crypto. And why he's going to continue to do so. And he went through this whole, lot of words. He was paid by the words, I guess, about, why he's involved and why he's going to continue putting his money there and all that. Okay. He said, quote, millennials, he's a millennial, went through childhood being told that we had to work hard to have financial security. Then we were told we had to shackle ourselves with debt to get a college degree that would get us a good job. Then we were told that only a lucky few actually build wealth from their jobs and that to have a true financial success, we should invest, And then when we invested, we were told we were doing it wrong. I get the message. Millennials aren't meant to win. Financial security isn't for us. So if we make a few grand by speculating penny stocks to the moon and hurt a few smug hedge fund vultures in the process, we'll settle for that. Is that the frame of mind of all this?
That's a good quote. It could be. They have a funny frame of mind, and I've never been able to put my finger on it.
The first sentence, millennials went through childhood being told they had to work hard to have financial security. I have a feeling everybody over the last 200 years was told that.
Yes, everybody was told that. And I don't recall ever telling a millennial, as I would be one of the people doing this kind of telling. It says, then we were told we had to shackle ourselves with debt. I've never recommended that to anybody.
Right.
Have you?
Nope. My kids, I worked and paid for their college, all of it.
Yeah, that's what we did.
Three went to school. One went to
graduate
school.
I don't know who's telling the kids to shackle themselves with debt to get a college degree. That's somebody, that's their own peers doing this. Most of the damage to millennials, from what I can tell, is peer groups.
Yeah, I agree with that. That I agree with. So then when they were told, maybe it's they told each other. Because they were all in this loop.
They tended not to be less inclined to listen to anybody other than their peers, is my experience with the millennials.
Right. But this thing is, financial security isn't for us. And again, I'll tell you what this is. This is rationalization once again. Once again, rationalization to make themselves feel better. Now, I'm going to say, when I say them, I'm not saying just millennials. People. They think they're so smart. They outsmart themselves. That's what's going on. Kind of weird.
There's an element to that. I don't think there's any doubt about it.
You know? So, anyway. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discussed in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. So the list is still looking about the same as it has for the last few weeks. A couple of new names on there. I don't think anything got kicked off. Oh, one day.
Dillard's.
Dillard's was a short and kept on going. It's like at 176 right now.
I have no idea what's wrong in there. Was that your pick or mine?
That was a joint pick, I think.
No, I don't think so.
I think
the joint pick was Pfizer.
Why did we do Pfizer? Why did we do Pfizer?
I don't know. Somebody, you.
Oh, boosters, booster shots.
Fantastic rationale.
Maybe it was me on the Dillard's. I don't know. I thought we both came up with that, but.
We talked about it together because Dillard's is a localized chain. There's no Dillard's out here. I have no idea what the hell's going on with Dillard's.
Yeah. These names that are, I wonder if, let's just look at this. DDS stock. Let me just look this up real quick. $173 up 10% today. I'm going to go max on my chart. All-time high on Dillard's. All-time high.
Makes no sense. I think if the short's a good idea, you should do it again.
That is unbelievable. That is just unbelievable. In 2015,
it makes no sense.
You know, in a way, do you think that there's some element of company of people that are saying, hey, let's save all these places if we can?
No, that'll be the day. When is that? That's a good one.
I don't need to. It makes no sense.
And of all the places you want to save, Dillard's?
It's up 200% year to date.
Why don't you save Gimbel's?
Gimbel's up 400% in the past year.
It's unbelievable. It's dumb.
This whole thing's crazy. All right. Anyway, going through the list really quickly because we're running out of time here. Planet Fitness was our short from last week, up 1%. Morphic Holdings, which is a buyout candidate, 14.75%. You paired that with Selecta Biosciences, saying there was something going on between the two.
Yeah, they're both up.
And they're both up. One's up 14.7, one is up 5.84. So everything is cruising along. I do not have any picks for this week.
I have one.
Oh, what do you got?
I think you might be able to guess.
Oh, GameStop, GME or Dillard's?
GameStop short.
Yeah, that's a good. That's a good one. Actually, I personally bought a put on that today. Where is the GameStop?
Short-term put?
I bought, I think it's 40 days.
40-day put.
6/9/2.
Any long puts? So there's any long, I mean, long-term puts.
Yeah, but they're so expensive.
They can't be that high.
I mean, well, I bought one that's, I bought the, you want to know what put I bought? It's trading at $300. I bought a 30-day put with a $100 strike price. They're so expensive. You just want a little movement and you'll get a hit. If it move, if it comes down 15-20% in a day, you'll get a nice bang on it. But they're ridiculously expensive.
They're out of control.
They're like 50, 60 bucks. Everything is. Games, this is going to be go against seven. Go against.
Oh, is this number seven?
Yeah, go against seven. You only lost on one.
We won six. We won five out of the six. That's the correct. Sixth one failed.
Mm-hmm.
So at this price, I have no doubt this is going to win.
$300.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. It's $5 stock.
It's $5.58 was the last one. $5.58. Episode 559. Okay, you know, you can see all this stuff online, so go check that out. This is short. This is a JCD. This go against, go again. It closed exactly at $300 today. You know, somebody's shenanigans. You know, one of the other things that's going to happen with GameStop on the 25th of this month, there's going to be a rebalancing of the Russell indices. This has become a very large position in the Russell 2000. It will have to be sold.
It'll have to be what?
Sold out of the Russell 2000.
Sold off the Russell, yeah.
Yep. So there's going to be some selling pressure towards the end of the month, I would think.
That's a good point.
So that's a good pick.
Okay,
good pick.
Well, good to know.
All right, I will talk to you next week.
All right, good deal.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now here's a hint, I feel like a mint. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.
Advertisements are not related to the host or affiliates and are not considered recommendations by the host of the show or any affiliates of Horowitz and Company.